Welcome to episode 39 of Justice with John Carpe, the podcast from the Justice Center for Constitutional Freedoms. I'm the show's producer, Kevin Steele, and with me today is Lindsay Shepherd, a free speech fellow with the center. There is a world beyond the constitutional rights abuses of the pandemic lockdown measures, and today we're going to take a glimpse at that world beyond the blue horizon. Many of the issues that the Justice Center deals with take place on post-secondary campuses across the nation. Generally, these involve one ideological group trying to shut down another group or individual they don't like. Whether it be woke academics trying to limit the discussion of a particular issue using cancel culture to target a colleague, or a student union trying to strangle a particular group, pro-life for instance, by abusing their power and purse strings to shove them off campus. Besides taking on these issues one by one, the Justice Center compiles them each year and includes them in a Campus Freedom Index, a publication measuring support for free speech at these institutions and rating each based on the findings. This year, Lindsay Shepherd was the lead author on the Campus Freedom Index. Lindsay, is this your first time as the lead on this?
Yeah, it is. I helped nominally with some research last year, but this is my first year being the lead author on the Campus Freedom Index, yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, why don't you dive in and just give us some of the key findings?
Sure.
We'll start with that.
So first, I'll explain what it is. So we've been publishing this report for 10 years. The Justice Center for Constitutional Freedoms has. So this is the 2020 edition. And what we do is we assess the campus free speech climate at 61 Canadian public institutions, public universities. And we give them a grade from A to F on their policies and their practices. And we do the same thing for student unions. So we assess whether they're upholding an environment that is conducive to allowing free expression to flourish. And the same thing for student unions.
Okay. Why stop at 61?
That's almost all of them.
Oh, okay. It's only universities. It's not colleges. I just want to clarify that.
Is that correct?
Okay. And I don't know why colleges are omitted. It seems like they have a lot of trouble with free speech in colleges down in the United States. So just a quibble. Anyways. Okay. So why don't you tell us the key findings then?
Sure. Where do I even start?
Who's the best? I'll start with the best. Or the worst.
Well, I'll start with how many A's and F's we got.
Okay.
So six universities got an A this year, and 13 got an F. So compared to last year, that's a couple more A's, but it's many more F's. So how can we interpret that? You know, maybe there's a divide that's kind of becoming entrenched here with some universities who are getting the free speech thing and some universities who aren't. Mm-hmm. And then in terms of student unions, it's more dire. It's only one got an A. It's the student union that is associated with the University of Waterloo. They got an A for their policies. And 23 student unions out of 61 got an F.
Well, it sounds to me like the problem doesn't emanate from the dean's office. It sounds like it's coming from the students' unions. Is that a correct assumption, or is that just measured out?
Actually, a lot of the time, calls for censorship come from the student union, which is really interesting. I can illustrate with an example. So at Dalhousie University in November 2019, there was going to be a leadership boot camp event, and I believe it was hosted by a church. So they were essentially booking space at Dalhousie University. The event was not associated with the university itself. And one of the key speakers was Laura Lynn Tyler Thompson. So she's someone who's prominent within Canada's Christian community, but she was also a former People's Party of Canada candidate. And so the Dalhousie University LGBTQ club and the Students' Union, they both called for this leadership boot camp to be canceled on the basis of who one of the main speakers was. And fortunately, Dalhousie University, they said, no, we're not canceling their booking. We're going to proceed with letting this happen, which is awesome to see. So they're one of the universities that got one of the rare A's in their university practices.
Oh, okay. And but it was the students' union that was calling for the censorship?
Is right, so they get the F. Okay, they get the F on their practices.
Oh, I see. Yeah. All right. So it can actually, you can actually have two different readings out of the same institution. That's good to hear. The way I read the difference, that is the sort of the slight rise in the ones defending free speech and the rise in those that are attacking it, is sort of like the zeitgeist. I mean, that seems to be the cultural divide that we're in now almost all across the Western world. Is there any sense of that, you know, that we're not that, we're not outliers here in Canada? What's happening here is kind of mirroring what's happening elsewhere. Would you agree or disagree?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You're seeing the same thing happening in the US for sure. The UK. But it's a lot of the times Canada is overlooked. So it's good we have this, because one of the things I think is great about the Campus Freedom Index is we keep track of, you know, every incident that happens across campuses in the academic year. And it's a really comprehensive list of things that are happening. And we can find out about these things through the media if it becomes like a high profile incident. Right. Or sometimes students come to the Justice Center and they say, you know, I wanted to start a church affiliated group with my student union and they denied me on the basis of religion. Then the Justice Center can actually help out too.
Right. Yeah. In monitoring the media, are you including like the university media as well, like their local papers and stuff like that?
I know. Yeah, everything. Absolutely everything. Yeah.
Okay. I really don't know if they even have papers anymore. I'm so far away from that in terms of time. You're a little closer than I am. You had graduated, what, a couple of years ago or a few years ago?
Got my master's in 2018. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So. Just so for the record, everybody, I'm clueless and Lindsay's helping me out here. Okay. All right. Now, you appear to be in the middle of all this, Lindsay. I'm referring to the Simon Fraser incident where you were scheduled to be a moderator of a panel on media bias and gender identity. I guess I should ask you right off the top, any sense of conflict of interest here?
No. I mean, I was just the moderator for that event.
Okay.
I wasn't a panelist. I wasn't an organizer. Mm-hmm. I was pretty much in the most neutral role you can get for that event, I'd say.
Okay, fair enough. I just wanted to make sure that we didn't have any conflict there. So,
No. And plus, like, the pro-free speech crowd in Canada, it's actually relatively small, these circles, you know? So
is it?
Yeah.
Free speech crowd in Canada. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, the people...
I happen to know that's true, but I just have to laugh at it myself.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. No worries. How big is it, by the way? Can you count them on one hand?
No. I mean, I just mean like there's a lot of overlap with you run into the same people at events and stuff. Yeah.
Okay. No worries. Okay. One thing I wondered about when I read this is, do you get any flack from the universities on this or do they just try to ignore it? I mean, you issue this. I know it's, you're always trying to push these things into the press. Do you manage to do that? Do they just sort of turn a blind eye?
So we do send letters every year to both, like, every university president and every student union president, telling them their results. You know, we ask them for feedback. This is the first year I've been involved with, you know, drafting a letter for those presidents. So I don't actually know how they respond. I would assume they just ignore it, but maybe that's being uncharitable.
Well, no, I did wonder whether you sought feedback from them, of course, because that's always a good way to, I guess, amplify the story is to seek feedback. And you're saying that this is something that you do and you don't have any responses yet. Is that it?
Not yet. I actually am not sure if the letters have gone out yet, though.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just... wondered how much got stirred up with this so far, you know, because it seems to me it's a pretty heavy hit on a university to say that you guys are censoring free speech. So, okay, fair enough. All right. Have you had any media feedback from this yet? Like, I know we issued this, the press release here is September 24th. So, anybody else interested so far?
Yeah, I've been on a couple radio stations. Did two this morning, actually.
All right.
One out of Alberta and one out of Ontario, talking to a student newspaper on Friday. Mm-hmm. So Yeah.
So there is some interest. You know, they're not all trying to ignore it. That's good. Okay.
Yeah. So, and one aspect is that I think people are becoming desensitized to seeing this kind of thing. It's like, campuses censor free speech. Like, what's new? That's not new. That's just the way it is. And so it just becomes the status quo, unfortunately. And so when people see that, they're like, oh, yeah, like, I wouldn't even try to host a controversial speech on campus. Like, of course, that's going to get shut down. Why would you even expect it to go forward?
Really? That's the attitude now?
I'm surprised at that.
Okay, well, yeah. See, I'm from a different generation where, you know, everybody thought free speech was a university issue. But, I guess, well, they've been doing this now since, 2011? And I'll put a link into the show notes showing off some of the past reports as well. All right. How about academics? Do they weigh in here, either publicly or behind the scenes? Do you hear much from them?
About the Campus Freedom Index?
Yeah.
I'm not sure, like, what feedback we get within our organization. Like, right, I'm just, like, a fellow, you know?
Okay, fellow.
I don't get, all the emails or anything.
No, I understand. I realize that. I'm just wondering if anything gets passed on to you or you get people emailing you and saying, well done, but don't quote me on that, you know, that kind of thing, so. I mean, the reason I'm leading into a question about an academic here in a minute, so I'm kind of like just wanted to introduce it that way.
Okay. I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Right.
And now my question about the academic. Okay. We had Queen's University Professor Bruce Pardy on the show, a recent show talking about academic freedom. And he was of the opinion that the best free speech policy is no free speech policy. And that, in other words, the university pledged to just sort of follow the law of the land. And he felt that was the best way to go on hate speech, slander, libel, et cetera. When you're looking at the universities and looking at their policies, I mean, do you account for that? The fact that maybe they don't say anything and that's a good thing? Or is it always a bad thing if they don't say anything? That's what I'm wondering. Is this taken into account maybe the fact that they are following simply the law of the land?
But the thing is, almost every university has some sort of, you know, respectful workplace or respectful environment policy, which sounds fine. It sounds right. That sounds neutral, whatever. But a lot of the times those policies are actually saying, yeah, you have the right to express yourself as long as you don't offend anybody. You have the right to express yourself, but you can't violate anything in this policy. And in this policy, we ban these kinds of jokes, these kinds of social media posts, etc. And so going back to what you were saying about Bruce Pardy, who is, you know, great, part of the free speech circles that I was talking about.
Oh, is he? Oh, okay.
Well, he's like very open about being pro freedom of expression.
Yes.
Very prominent. Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm kind of mixed on that. On one hand, I agree that there is no need for a free speech statement because ideally, yes, the university would just be a place where there are no restrictions on free expression. It's just your charter rights outside of the campus also apply on the campus. But because of the suppressed climate on campuses now, I think it is kind of nice when you see a university that just puts out a statement that says, we are dedicated to open inquiry and free thought and fostering discussion. And, you know, for example, the University of Lethbridge, they got an A in policies and an A in practices. And I was reading through their statement on free expression, and I thought, this is like really encouraging. It made me want to go back to school to the University of Lethbridge. I was like, this is really nice. And they actually followed it up in their practices because in March of this year, there was a former UCP candidate, United Conservative Party of Alberta candidate named Kaylin Ford, and she was supposed to give a presentation on the University of Lethbridge campus called Free Inquiry in the Age of Outrage. And a handful of, you know, community members, students, they expressed outrage, which is funny because that's what she was going to talk about. And they were like, you got to kick her off. You can't have this presentation. She's too controversial because she was in like a media incident last year because some of her private conversations where she talked about like immigration policy were leaked. And so, you know, they were calling to shut her down. But then the acting provost of the University of Lethbridge released a statement saying, no, like, it's going to go ahead. We are a space for open inquiry. And it, like, her speech was eventually canceled by COVID because it was March 2020. But at least it wasn't censorship, right? And so the University of Lethbridge, I kind of like nominated them as the best university in Canada for free speech because they have a very clear commitment to freedom of expression. And it appears that they practice what they preach.
Just the rest of the country got shut down. That's all. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. It, like, as an aside, it is going to be really interesting to do the 2021 Campus Freedom Index because already a lot of universities are saying they're going to be entirely online from September 2020 until April 2021, the whole academic year, basically. So how we're going to assess that, it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I guess there's not going to be that much. Well, there was a fair bit of rampaging down in the United States while the pandemic was going on. So maybe we'll have some protests in the news. It's hard to say. But yeah.
And there are always professors who get in trouble for what they post on their private social media accounts. That's also something that we take note of and take into consideration for the grades. So,
yeah, I noticed that one fellow, he was canceled after he wrote an op-ed, I think, in the Vancouver Sun.
Yes. Do you want me to go into that?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was an instructor named Mark Hecht. He's from Mount Royal University in Calgary. And yeah, like you said, he wrote an op-ed about social trust and ethnic diversity. And it was published in the Vancouver Sun in September 2019. And I believe it was taken down the same night from the Vancouver Sun's website. It was too late to pull it from the paper edition of the Vancouver Sun, so it did get out in their Saturday edition of the paper, but it was completely erased online, except for someone who archived it using one of those archive sites, so you can still read it if you really try to find it. But and like initially, Mount Royal University stood up for him. I believe they released a statement saying, you know, he's allowed to say what he wants. But then they did something really underhanded, and that was that he was supposed to teach a field school in Europe about sustainability in the spring 2020 semester, and they canceled it for no reason. No, like there was interest and all that. He was set to go, and it was just canceled for no reason.
So and of course, he interpreted that as retaliation. Then I take it, but he's not sure. Is that the
And that's the thing is like they won't. Sometimes they just won't tell you, and you can never really be sure, but you're pretty sure. And I think this case seems pretty clear, right? And now he's no longer affiliated with Mount Royal University.
Well, hopefully that's for the best for him if he wants to go on writing. Do you have any sense of why the column was pulled and by whom? Who pulled it off the website? And why, do you know?
Was it made public? So I read it right when it came out. And I was like, oh, this is kind of interesting. And then I just saw the comments pouring in on Twitter saying, like, this is a white nationalist, white supremacist, bigoted, racist article. I can't believe you published it, Vancouver Sun. And, what did he even say in his article? I can't remember. But I found it quite mild in tone. But I actually talked to Mark Hecht, and there were a couple of things he wished he reworded. That's what he told me. But yeah, so the attacks came strong. They came right away. And that's why the article was retracted so quickly.
So it was just, as far as they know, a general public thing? They were the ones writing in? Like it wasn't an organized group or anything?
It just seemed like
Students Against Racism or something, blah, blah, blah.
You know? Seemed just like the general public. Yeah. And I guess his central argument was that, actually it wasn't even his argument. He was just basing it off of research that says social trust in a society decreases with more ethnic diversity. Mm-hmm. And that was not his pure opinion. That was just kind of research he was bringing into the piece, I think.
Okay. And you could include that in the Campus Freedom Index because it didn't really happen on campus, did it? I mean, the retaliation did, obviously, but that kind of the scope of the whole report, you know, if it happens to someone related to a university?
Well, the thing is, Mount Royal University actually released a statement about it.
Ah, yes. Yeah. Sorry. Okay.
And the faculty did organize, they wrote a letter anonymously to the administration, like I think 30 or 40 faculty members, and trying to denounce him, saying that the university should denounce him. I think that was the gist of it, which they didn't do, but they took away his field school. So,
right. Okay. So he got the ire of his peers here, I guess. Is there much of that actually in the whole scope of this, you know, the academics turning on each other? Or I would say, because we did note that the student unions obviously seem to be fairly anti-free speech. Are we getting the idea that it's the faculty as well turning on each other? Is there any other incidents like that?
Well, there's an incident I could touch on that there's actually faculty that supported the guy.
Oh,
we want to take the flip side.
Okay, well, that's, you know, that doesn't fit the whole if it bleeds, it leads thing, but we're well past the beginning. So go ahead, talk about the good news.
So at the University of Alberta in November 2019, there was a lecturer in the Faculty of Education named Dougal MacDonald, and he wrote in a Facebook page, or sorry, a Facebook post on his personal page, he wrote that the Holodomor, like the famine genocide of the 1930s, it's a hoax pushed by former Nazi collaborators and their spawn. And he was saying that if you believe in the Holodomor, it's because you are trying to discount the benefits of communism. But anyway, so the University of Alberta, they released a statement through email saying that he's a private citizen. He's allowed to say that if he wants to. And again, the student union of the University of Alberta said, you got to fire this guy.
Right.
Okay. So they were once again the people calling for the censorship. They said, you have to fire him. You have to denounce all that. And I think that's what sparked 40 University of Alberta faculty members to write a letter supporting this guy, Dougal MacDonald, and saying that he has a right to speech. So it's interesting because they'll stand up for some things, but not others. Because there was another incident in March at the University of Alberta where a gender-critical feminist professor of anthropology. And gender-critical feminism, for those who don't know, is basically believing that biological sex is real and there's differences between males and females. So she's a very like out gender critical feminist, this professor. And then suddenly there were student complaints that she makes the learning environment unsafe. And she was never told how many complaints or what they said or anything. And I also emailed the university and asked what were these complaints, how many, what was the nature of them. Just no response, right? They won't speak to it at all. You know, my inquiry was ignored. And so because of these complaints, quote unquote, she had to resign from her role as associate chair of undergraduate programs at the university. So yes, she still has her professorship, but she was fired from that chair position. And it matters because your service within the university is part of your success as a professor. And your, you know, when you have your annual review of how well you're doing, your service counts. And she was fired from that with no reason provided as to why. They just said she was not effective anymore in that role. Not effective.
Okay.
So, again. And no one stood up for her, you know, so they'll stand up for Dougal MacDonald and they won't stand up for her. So it's just, sometimes it's so random.
Right. Okay.
Or I mean, maybe not random, but selective.
Selective and again, yeah, going to the cause, I suppose. Did you notice, say, the common complaint is that the universities are filled with leftists? Would you say that the slights against free speech were coming from either the left or the right, or did it matter at all? Simply a baseline was free speech, you know, in terms of the various incidents.
So, yeah, we're not like partisan in our analysis of this,
okay,
you know, index, but it is very clearly coming from the left.
Yeah.
When you look at the issues, you know, like gender critical feminism, like which means, you know, like trans issues,
right.
Gender issues. There was a speech shutdown on Antifa violence at UBC.
Right. That actually is a case with the Justice Center. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, there was a guy who had to step down from a chair position as well, or sorry, a dean position because he tweeted hashtag all lives matter, which is seen as a slight against Black Lives Matter because you're not on board with their movement. So he had to step down from a position. So these are kind of like all issues that are championed by the left.
Right, yeah.
And I think in the States, it's fair to say that conservatives shut things down. I don't have any examples, but I did see a report by FIRE, which works on free speech rights in the U.S. on campuses. They did say that a lot of shutting down comes from the right.
Right.
I don't see that happening here.
In Canada. Okay.
Right.
I would be hard-pressed to identify any university as being right-leaning myself, but then again, full disclosure, I am on the right. I know that you're a little more neutral. I actually had a chance to watch your Leaving the Left video on YouTube. Yeah. One of the early walk-away videos.
Yeah.
So I'll leave a link to that as well, just as by way of introduction to Lindsay. Okay. And looking at the report, I see that some of the lowest marks or the highest criticism goes towards the two universities in Vancouver, Simon Fraser and UBC here in Alberta. Of course, anywhere east of BC, we call it the Left Coast. Perhaps you could go into a little bit about what's wrong with British Columbia. At least describe us those incidents.
Yeah, BC is actually kind of interesting because, so Canada-wide, there's a real shortage of university free speech clubs. I counted about 5 Canada-wide.
Right.
And it's probably less than that because so many of them are not active or not actively hosting events. And I'm talking about like pre-COVID, right?
Maybe you could define free speech club to us.
Yeah, like just, you know, a club that is called, you know, the Free Speech Club or Students for Free Expression. When I was a graduate student, my club was called the Laurier Society for Open Inquiry. Yeah. So something like that.
Just means you're going to invite a bunch of controversial speakers? Is that what it basically means?
Kind of, but for at least my club, it was a little more, I think it's a little more sophisticated than that because it's the recognition that the university itself as a body will invite just the same kinds of people who have the same views on, you know, Indigenous land issues, the environment, gender issues, like all of the hot topics of the day. They only sponsor, like the university itself will only sponsor certain views. And so these students in these free speech clubs, they recognize that there are a lot of really interesting, compelling people out there who are serious people, serious thinkers and intellectuals and even academics who have different things to say and who would never be invited to speak at like a university gala or luncheon or something like that. One of them is Frances Widdowson. You know, she's a Mount Royal University professor who disagrees with like the way universities treat Indigenous issues. You know, she kind of criticizes university land acknowledgements. She thinks they're a way of preventing open inquiry because if you're told that you need to celebrate Indigenous perspectives or Indigenous ways of knowing, well, how are you approaching science then? Like, is the Indigenous way of knowing interfering with the science? She thinks it does. She thinks like Indigenous ways of knowing are not science.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. I don't want to like misrepresent her views, but.
Oh, okay. No, I mean, we were basically talking about the idea of free speech clubs, what they're doing here. The fact that they exist and the fact that they're inviting people with alternative viewpoints, because as you say, these alternative viewpoints are being ignored by the university. It looks like we're kind of zeroing in on the problem here, which is, you know, there's a uniformity of opinion that cannot be breached on universities. And that's why I think, I don't know. Where do you, in your opinion, where do you see this emanating from? A lot of people will say it's a bunch of lefty professors. Some people will blame the administrations for this. Some people say it's the student unions. I mean, we obviously at the beginning said it was the student unions. What do you think? Where do you think this is coming from based on your experience?
Like the tendency to censor?
Tendency to censor, yeah. Where is it? Do you think it's just a natural human reaction to gain the advantage?
I mean, my personal view is when you grow up in Canada, you kind of start to internalize guilt for all the sins of your ancestors, colonialism, the way that, the settlers, if you want to call them that, treated Indigenous populations, the way women were treated and they couldn't vote, blah, blah, blah. You know, so you start to internalize a lot of guilt and think like, wow, it was just so bad and I feel so bad. Especially when they bring up arguments like, oh, like there's intergenerational trauma and those things that happened then still affect people today.
Right.
And so I think there's just a lot of it is rooted in guilt and just, feeling bad.
Oh, and okay.
Yeah, I think it really is. It kind of comes down to that is they feel bad for those things and they think they can rectify it somehow by, I don't know.
That's okay. I understand what you're saying. I just, having kind of left that behind myself so many years ago, it's a little disheartening to the point of it being amusing that it's still around, I guess, the internalization of all this guilt that we have here in Canada. And I guess it shouldn't be a surprise that we've had this index. Did you go back and look at the previous years as you were doing this? You say you're involved in the last one, and then this one. Did you check out any of the years previous to that at all? I didn't get a chance to look myself, so.
In previous years, I was a reader of it, I found out about it only in 2017, I think. So I kind of flipped through it. I thought it was interesting. Mm-hmm. And then, fast forward a couple years and I'm writing it.
Yeah. Well, of course, that's because, you actually became featured in it there for a while with the Jordan Peterson incident. I think that was the campus freedom incident that I guess brought your awareness, I guess,
right.
When it happened to you. Okay.
Exactly.
Do you get, in your research, do you get much feedback from people that are affected by this? Do you get to talk to them at all? You say that people do reach out. I don't know whether, it's just the people on the phones at the Justice Center that get to talk to these people. Do you get to talk to them at all?
I think it's mostly the lawyers who talk to them. And then I find out later.
Okay.
to include it. Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm going to give you a chance here to sort of criticize the whole thing. Do you think that it can be done better? And if so, how? And what would be your recommendations for altering or improving the methodology? What would you like to see done here?
It's hard to say. I actually just don't really have any ideas other than what I said before about people becoming desensitized. Maybe there needs to be a way to make this information hit harder. And yeah.
Well, one of the things that I would like to see, and this kind of refers back to what we were talking about earlier, is some reaction or some attempt at getting a reaction included in the report. Because that was one of the tricks of the trade when I was a journalist. You always seek comment from one side, from both sides, and it's telling if somebody doesn't reply. So, I would like to see, we sought comment from these people, but they didn't say anything. So it kind of increases the drama somewhat. The attempt is to make it look like they're ducking the question, I guess. So I would like to see a little bit of that in the report. It, of course, is...
Okay, so like how the university presidents or student union presidents responded? Is that what
Or if they didn't. Right. You give them ample time to respond. And if they don't respond, that's fairly telling. If they issue a statement, that's great. I mean, you don't criticize them if they issue a statement. And even if the statement is contrary to your beliefs, you just put it out there for people to see. And that's, I think, what I would like to see in terms of, getting something like this out there is, pushing it a little harder, I guess, I'd like to make it a little harder hitting. I don't know whether you would do that. I'm trying to determine what your role in putting this thing together is exactly. Maybe you could just describe what you did here.
Sure. So it's, you know, a months-long process. A lot of work goes into it. So, so for example, with the policies, I looked at past years.
Okay.
And you check for every single university, do they still have those policies? Did they improve them? Did they get rid of them? So for example, this year, all Alberta universities got a free speech statement because the Kenny government told them to.
Right.
And so, you know, that was new. And then I gathered an incident list of just everything that happened at every single campus, across Canada. You know, if they had any run-ins with censorship and free expression, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, for the policies and practices, then you have to grade them. And so we have like a more detailed methodology that we follow. So we ask, like, does this university, for policy, does this university have a clear and unequivocal commitment to free speech? Do they have any kind of implied speech code? You know, like something that says, you're not allowed to use language that is inappropriate or triggering or violates our safe space campus, something like that.
Do they actually have statements like that?
That's more student unions that use that kind of language.
Okay.
There are student unions who have a safer spaces policy. Yeah.
Okay.
There was one student union, now I can't remember which one it was, but they had a positive space policy. And then a whole bunch of their other policies were based on this positive space policy. And then I looked at the wording of the positive space policy, and it said, like, coming soon or something. So it wasn't even there.
Do you know what a positive space is?
It's just, I would say, probably similar to a safe space, but another word for it. So just, you know, can't hurt anyone's feelings, can't be offensive. You know, anything we don't like, if you say something we don't like, we'll kick you out. Stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
Or like, we won't provide you with any funding for your club or project if we don't like it. It's just like that.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Pretty generic. Just to define safe space here, that's actually not like a physical space. That just means everywhere that we can influence, is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was funny.
I've often wondered about it.
Yeah. I think at Western University, they had, the student union had a women's policy, and they spelt women with an X, like WOMXN, because it's the student unions that use this kind of language, right?
Okay.
And that clearly has like an ideological component to it when you're saying that. Right. You're trying to say that, you know, women are not just biological women. Women are kind of just like anything when you say that with an X. And so I clicked on the policy, and for the entire, like, something like 20 pages, that X never appeared again, and it was just spelt as women's with an E-W-O-M-E-N. So it's like,
they forgot to use their find and replace, that's all.
Yeah, exactly. It was just kind of silly. That, like, there were a lot of gems with the student unions that didn't really have an impact on the grading of the index, but that were just so silly.
Come on, that's the stuff we got to hear about right now then. That's a good one. Okay, so they upfront spell it with an X, and that means, sorry, can you interpret that for me again? The X does what?
It kind of is a way of saying women are not just biological women. Women are anyone who says they're a woman.
Oh, I see.
So or like a non-binary person. So it kind of comes along with this whole worldview on gender.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I gotcha. Any other good ones?
There was one that was just so strange. Do you want me to find it?
Yeah, go ahead.
It was in Quebec. I can't remember if it was Concordia or McGill. Okay, so the McGill University Student Union, they publish a position book, which, you know, has all of their positions on different issues. And one of them says, it is a person's choice in some cases to not use menstrual products at all. And that is a decision that is entirely theirs to make and one that should be respected as such. And it's like, what are you talking about? Not use menstrual products? So like if someone's bleeding all over the hallways of like if a woman's bleeding all over the hallways of your school, you don't care. I just don't understand. Like, what do you mean by that? You're not going to get mad at them.
This is a student union came out with
Yeah,
this?
The McGill Student Union said that if someone doesn't want to use menstrual products, they don't have to.
Oh, I see. Is this a burning issue on universities? Are they the only ones?
I guess so. I don't know. I just don't even know how to interpret that. Because you could expect them to say something about... Like, there's some people who are advocating for menstrual products in men's washrooms as well. Like, we've seen that kind of advocacy on university campuses. Maybe not necessarily from the student union, but from, you know, activists. Advocacy groups. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like LGBTQ centers, that kind of thing. But to say that someone doesn't need them at all and can choose to freely bleed on the floor, I guess, is apparently something that they're very invested in saying. So
I see. But they don't receive an F or an A for that, I guess.
No, it's
not
just
really
kind
a
of like
speech
a
thing, is it? Right.
Yeah. It's just an interesting tidbit.
No, these are great. I mean, this gives guys like me who are out of touch when it comes to what's happening on the campuses these days, other than through the dramatic stories that we read in these indexes, something to some understanding of what's going on there and how
actually that
is going getting.
The McGill Student Union, they actually have two more things that are maybe more pressing. One says, there is no one step or set of steps that an individual must undergo in order to have their gender identity affirmed and respected. And, you know, the gender critical feminists, they would say, well, that means a male can walk into a female's washroom or a female's change room. That's what it means, because someone who's transitioning into another gender does not need to prove anything. That's what the policy says.
Right.
So there are people who would take issue with that. And so for a student union to say, this is the student union position. And then so the other one that they had that I included, just because it was interesting. The fight against the climate crisis is inextricable from a movement to combat systemic inequalities and the dominance of capitalist and colonialist paradigms in the global north. So it's like not even enough to be environmentally minded or like eco-conscious. You have to connect it to capitalism and colonialism and all that. So,
well, it's all connected, man. Don't you know?
Yeah.
That sounds like maybe you should develop as an aside from the Freedom Index, a craziness index as well.
Honestly, those kind of things made it more fun though, because looking through policies for hours really strains your eyes, really is kind of boring sometimes. But then something like this jumps out at you and it's just very interesting and makes you laugh. So I kind of appreciated it.
We are appreciating it here and we want to hear more. Have you got more of that stuff? I mean, these are the weeds that we don't necessarily get to hear about, getting down into the weeds here of what's going on the campus. I mean, this all affects free speech because, you know, when you criticize these things, that's when you stand out and you get stepped on. I mean, that's I think, part of the problem here. This stuff gets institutionalized by the student unions and becomes sort of the norms that you cannot transgress. And if you do, then they're going to throw out the protest crowd at you. So,
well, one at Concordia University, their student union, they also publish a positions book with their the positions they take as an organization. And one of them is the CSU, so the Concordia Student Union, calls on Concordia University to formally adopt a sanctuary campus status by not collaborating with the Canadian Border Service Agency. So basically not collaborating with Border Services to deport someone undocumented. Is that really happening in Montreal? I don't know.
Well, they were having people walking up to the Canadian border. I mean, it seemed to me like the issue had become something of a wannabe Mexican border scenario, but
I mean, actually the university campus, like were border agents coming on the university campus and arresting undocumented people in class? Like, what?
Okay. Well, they felt a need to take a stand. Okay. Just rewind a second here. You say this is a position paper that they publish?
Positions or book.
Booklet,
yeah.
A book. Okay. Mm-hmm. How thick is the book?
Oh, this particular one? Mm-hmm. Let's see. This one's only 4 pages, 3 pages. But it's just like it has 22 positions in it.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So this would give you a good idea of where they stand politically and the kind of things, the kind of norms that you cannot violate. So you can look at those and get a gauge of, you know, without incidents actually happening, you can sort of get an idea of where what they're saying is forbidden, I suppose.
Yeah, and I mean, one of the things that is actually more of a serious issue, I suppose, is when student unions declare that they are a pro-choice union. And so this year we saw that happen at both the University of Ottawa and Simon Fraser University. The student unions declared that they're a pro-choice union. And so almost every university has a pro-life club, I would say, pretty much every university in Canada. And by taking a pro-choice stance, that means they're saying, we are defunding the pro-life group. We no longer recognize you as a club. You're not allowed to table at club days. You're not allowed to book rooms. And every club from like that's associated with the student union gets, I think, a couple hundred bucks in funding for events and stuff. So they no longer get that funding. And no matter what you think about the issue of abortion, it's just strange to say, yeah, we as a organization that you have to pay fees to, we take this stance. And if you take this stance, like, we do not recognize you. You are not allowed to organize under any terms.
Oh, okay. Are there pro-choice groups as well? I don't suppose if the whole student union is declaring itself one, I don't suppose it's a matter of favoring one group over the other. They're basically saying, we're the superintendent here. Okay.
Yeah, I've never seen, I mean, I'm sure some universities have some sort of pro-choice or like something like an access for women group or something, but usually it's just that the women's centers, which every university has, they always have like a women's center and a LGBTQ center. Those centers declare themselves pro-choice more often than not.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's just kind of, I guess, assumed. But now they're going a step further and saying, if you are part of a pro-life club, like you're out, you're not allowed to do that anymore.
So actually it's an act of blocking. Okay. Well, that would be, I guess, that would fall under free speech as well. I mean, it's
a way
of punitively going after someone because of their stance. Was this fairly common across the country? I don't need an actual number, but I mean, it is something that you brought up. I thought maybe.
So that was two of them this year who've done that. I know Carleton University has done that. So it's quite a few. I'm not sure how many, but at least three, but I'm sure more. But yeah, it's a way of demanding ideological conformity, you know?
Sure, yeah. Well, of course, in this, if they withdraw their right to form or act as a club, then I guess they could deny them, you said, tables at club things. You would deny them the ability to set up and speak about their issue. Is that the intention here?
Yeah. And they're not allowed to book rooms, stuff like that.
Okay.
And a lot of free speech clubs actually face the same thing. Mm-hmm. They are not allowed to get status with the student union.
Right.
And same with men's rights. There was like a case at Ryerson University where there was like a men's issues awareness club that was trying to form. And they were not allowed. I think the Justice Center got involved in that one, but that was like way before I was involved in these issues.
Right, yeah. They would just have to declare themselves a trans club, and then the men could join it, I suppose.
Oh, yeah, there could be like 10 trans clubs, and they'd all get funding and stuff like that, yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Don't want to go too far afield here, knowing the Canadian laws that we have to respect at the moment. Anyways, go ahead.
I remember when I was an undergrad at Simon Fraser University, and there was some outcry from people who wanted a men's center because they were saying, you have a women's center, we want a men's center. And I kind of was just thinking to myself, because I was like a little more apolitical at that time about these kinds of things. I was thinking like, I literally never go to the women's center. Like, you could close that down and not have either, and I'd be fine.
Yeah, but of course, you know, there are people with jobs at these places. They're making decent salaries, and that's really what it's about, you know. And also, to a certain extent, they publicize their findings and causes through the media. You know, the media will turn to someone in that center for comment on an issue, say a Supreme Court issue or something like that. So if that isn't there, you know, that position doesn't get publicized. That's all, you know, so.
Yeah. So there are these things on university campuses called PIRGs, public interest research groups. So for example, at Laurier, it was called ELSPIRG, mm-hmm. you know, Laurier students, public interest research groups, like, you know, okay. so they're called PIRGs. Right. And they collect student fees, you know, like every student pays what, $6 a year or something to these people.
Right.
And they simply engage in activism. That's all they do. I think one of the things ELSPIRG did out of Laurier is they were literally organizing against Doug Ford. Very partisan, right?
Right.
Very yeah. partisan activities, like defund the police, that kind of stuff. And they released a financial report that I looked at. And it was like, basically all the money they got from student fees went to their own salaries. And it's the same case with all of these people. And right. these, like, the university does endorse this because they're collecting the student fees and giving it to these groups. And you can opt out, but so many students just, they don't care. You know, they see it as $3 a term.
Right.
So they're like, whatever, it's not worth, like, having to go fill out a form and stuff. Or they don't even take a look at their financial statements, maybe, because their parents are paying. Yeah. So.
Not a lot of engagement, is what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah, the apathy is a problem.
Yeah,
you know, when they don't even care where their money is going, they're not really paying attention to what's going on. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think that's fairly well known. That's why it's kind of interesting to hear this issue sort of, or see this issue grow over the last few years. You know, it's widely known that tough to get students to vote in general elections, that kind of thing, because of course they're too busy being young and having fun and, you know, doing more interesting things than following politics and free speech issues. But there is, of course, a small minority that is very engaged, and that minority seems to be dictating what is acceptable and what isn't. I think that's my opinion, of course.
No, I think the Campus Freedom Index proves that. Like,
mm-hmm.
23 student unions got an F and only one got an A.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that is I was part of the student union at when I was doing my grad degree, the graduate student union. But most of the people who join those associations are outright activists.
Right.
And activism is part of their ethos. It's part of their philosophy. They see it as their duty to get involved and spread their messaging in whatever way possible. And that's how the student unions get taken over, is by people who like see this as their mission.
Right. So, I mean, in a way, those of us who wanted to see students engaged are seeing it. It just doesn't necessarily always happen the way we
right.
want it. Okay. All right. Well, we're getting close to the end of this segment. We can talk for another 10 minutes or so just to fill in all the gaps that I've got to cut out of this.
Sure.
No, that's okay. Any other highlights that you'd like to bring to the fore here? I mean,
Well, so one thing we did extra this year, so in addition to doing the grading,
mm-hmm.
is I analyzed every university's mission statement. So sometimes this is called a mission statement, sometimes mission, vision, values, you know, core principles,
mm-hmm.
Guiding values, like something like that, right?
Right.
So I analyzed all of the statements that these universities put out. And I found that 69% committed themselves to promoting or celebrating diversity and inclusion.
Right.
And only 21% commit themselves to free expression. And so first of all, diversity is like a morally neutral thing. It just is.
Are they talking, they're not talking diversity of opinion here. They're talking diversity
of
basically types, groups. That kind of
skin
thing.
Skin color, yeah, gender,
okay.
That's what they're talking about. And secondly, unfortunately, diversity and inclusion is used as a way to shut things down. Mm-hmm. So at Brock University, there was a professor named Thomas Hudlicky, and he published an article in a German-based journal, an academic journal. And he was just reflecting on his field, which was chemistry. Right. And he was saying he's seeing a lot of diversity-based hiring as opposed to merit-based hiring.
Right.
And he's seeing that as a hindrance to his field. And also he said something about how master-apprentice relationships between professors and graduate students is the ideal working relationship. And so for these things, his article was retracted from the journal. And when all this was happening, Brock University threw him under the bus.
Right.
They said, you know, these are hurtful views. We love diversity and inclusion. You cannot insult diversity and inclusion. And so it's turned into this whole ideology, and it's hard to get people on board with that, to understanding that, because...
Sorry, clarify, understanding what? That
diversity and inclusion is not always as nice as it sounds.
Ah, okay, right.
Because everyone can be on board with, this is literally the most used line about, Canadian culture right now, is that we're diverse and inclusive. So everyone has kind of internalized that. So when someone like me says, well, look, they're using diversity and inclusion as a way to excoriate this professor. And also even NSERC, which is the Research Council for Natural Sciences Engineering Grants in Canada, Canada-wide.
Right.
They also said the same thing. They said, Dr. Thomas Hudlicky's statements are not conducive to diversity and inclusion.
Okay.
And who knows what's going to happen to this guy.
Oh, it's still in limbo. He's still employed. They yanked his paper. That's it at this point.
I think he had tenure. Yeah. And I'm not sure of any other update, though.
Okay. But we can assume that he's going to be shipped out of this diverse pond, probably, based on precedent.
And all he said was, you should be hired based on merit, and there should be a master-apprentice working relationship. That's all it takes.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then you're seen as being basically, I don't want to go too far, but basically not Canadian, not having Canadian values because you don't agree with diversity and inclusion.
Right.
Not that they said that. I should just say that he was seen as someone who is not living by the values of Brock University, which is diversity and inclusion.
I see. Okay. So they didn't go as far, but you're basically equating it with Canadianism. Okay.
I kind of equate it like that. Yeah. Yeah, I've heard that kind of thing before. You're un-Canadian if you're not on board with our ideologies and stuff. So
yes, well, I've faced that accusation as well, and I know right now we're skating on thin ice.
On this podcast?
Sure.
Are we? Uh oh.
It's okay. It's all right. No, that's great. I'll leave. You one more opportunity to finish up with anything? You want to sum up your report here for us? I guess you're going to face the challenge of doing the next one, as you said earlier, in a year of COVID. But it sounds like, the type of offenses that you've cited here, people publishing papers and columns here and there, that the show will continue regardless of whether we're locked in our houses and wearing face masks at the supermarket. So I assume you're going to have lots to do next year anyway. So,
yeah, I mean, it really is oftentimes about what professors or students are posting on their social media,
right?
Which is terrible. That's their personal expression, but throughout an entirely online post-secondary year or even more, then things might still be happening. Censorship still might be happening,
Great. We can look forward to that.
Hey.
No, I just wanted to take that as a segue out of the podcast at this point. I want to thank you, Lindsay, for coming on the show. It's been great having you, and hopefully you'll come back here sometime and we'll do it again.
All right. Thanks for having me. It was fun.